I've already shared with Mike at some point, but Abingdon, in what used to be Berkshire, now Oxfordshire, is actually a very famous town. It's where I was born. You won't find a blue plaque yet. And the building I was born in, that'll be difficult, because the building I was born in isn't there anymore. My mother was evacuated from Southampton at the beginning of the war, so that I could be born in safety, which was very good at the time. Not easy for my parents, but that has a special place in my heart nonetheless. We are continuing this morning our little series called Living in the Light. And we're going to talk this morning about a Christ-honoring family. Last week, Pauline shared thoughts with us about a Christ-honoring marriage. And this is all part of a sequence of thoughts that the Apostle Paul is sharing with his readers in Ephesus and elsewhere about what it really means to be a follower of Jesus who's come out of the darkness of ignorance about God and not knowing God and not having a relationship with God into the light of knowing God and walking with God and living with God. And part of that journey is looking at what it means to be a family that's following Jesus in the sense of a father and mother and children, that kind of family. I'm going to read to you Ephesians chapter 5, verse 21, because that's a very important beginning to this section, and then a little bit from the beginning of chapter 6. So, Ephesians chapter 5, verse 21, Paul says, submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. Wives, submit yourselves to your own husbands as you do to the Lord. And then in verse 25, husbands, love your wives just as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her. Chapter 6, verse 1, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with a promise, so that it may go well with you and that you may enjoy long life on the earth. Fathers, do not exasperate your children. That struck a chord with a few people. I don't know whether fathers or children at that point. Fathers, do not exasperate your children. Instead, bring them up in the training and instruction of the Lord. I just want to say a couple of things before I start to share with you this morning. Because Paul is talking here about family, wives, husbands, fathers, mothers, parents, children, I want to make it clear that I'm fully aware that for many people this morning, there are going to be some emotional things and sensitive things that I might say. First of all, I know there are some of you who have been called to singleness. And I want to say I have the greatest respect for those who have been called by Jesus to singleness. I also know that there are others who have to live with singleness or single parenthood because of circumstances beyond their control. And I want to touch on that a little bit further on as well. So I just want to say, please listen carefully. I'm talking about family because that's what Paul is talking about here. And I am aware of those for whom some of the things I might say might feel a little emotional, might arouse emotions. I want to be sensitive to those and respect those who are in that sort of situation. Last Saturday, not yesterday, a week ago yesterday, our eldest granddaughter, Catherine, got married. One of those sort of signposts in a family's life when your granddaughter gets married. And this caused me, as well as looking at what I was going to be sharing with you this morning, caused me to reflect a little on the passage of the years and on what family is all about, especially a family that's seeking to follow Jesus and to walk and live in the light. And I look back, thinking back, Dorian and I have been married for 54 years, 54 and a half years. And it's getting better all the time. Just to say that those are a bit further back along the way, it gets better all the time. We've had four children, three of them within 3 years. That teaches you a bit about family. And then a gap of 9 years for recovery before our daughter Emma, and some of you know about because she works in Kazakhstan, worked with Sarah Williams over the years in Kazakhstan before Emma came along as a very welcome, slightly unexpected, but very welcome, number four. Between them, they have produced for us 12 grandchildren, three of whom live in Kazakhstan, three youngest, four of whom, all boys, live in Canada, great hulking Canadian, all-American boys. After the wedding, they came back up to Sunderland with us for a day or two. We came up to the caravan so that they could see the caravan, and they wanted to see the wall. So, duly to the wall, we went. But they didn't want to see the wall. They wanted to walk along the wall. So we dropped them. At Halstead's. How many of you were done differently? We dropped them at Halstead's. They set off walking. We set off driving. We called in at one or two other places to viewpoints and had a look at the wall. Actually, we'd love to walk a bit of the wall, but we had to get to Burderswold in time 4.5 hours later to meet them. 14 miles of the best bit of the wall in 4.5 hours. And when I met them at Milecastle 49, which some of you may know, near Burderswold, they ran up the hill. And then I had to keep up with them for the last bit back to the parking area at Burderswold. Why am I saying all that? Because, you know, family's full of those kind of memories. It's also full of all sorts of challenges. Our four children are all following Jesus, and their spouses are two fine sons-in-law and two daughters-in-law, who are also fine, but sometimes we've had a bit of up and down times with them, are all following Jesus. Our grandchildren are largely, I'm not quite sure where they are. We've had some good conversations. I had some good conversations with Aidan and David, who are 21 and 19, but they're children of their time. And I have to say, and some of you may resonate with this, I don't understand them. I don't understand their generation very well. So there's certain challenges that go with that. On the Sunday last week, we had 14 of our family together, and it was great. Some of them just couldn't be there, of course. So, but these kind of reflections, you know, family changes with culture, changes with generations. But what we want to try and see this morning are some of the issues, some of the principles that Paul talks about when he says this is what a believing family should look like. Let's just remind ourselves of the journey we've come through this passage from darkness to light. Darkness to light is a radical change. And we've talked about different changes that shift from the darkness of unbelief and ignorance and not knowing Jesus to the light of knowing Jesus and wanting to walk with him. Change in our motives, change in our attitudes. We talked about putting off the old man and putting on a new man, new person. It means change in the way we relate to people. Holly talked to us about the way of love, the way we relate to people. It means change in our values and our behavior. We talked about what it meant to look like children of light, children carrying the light of God's love. It means change in our understanding. Neil took us through the way of wisdom, which is the way of being led by the Holy Spirit. And then it means a change in the way we handle key relationships. Relationships within our marriage, within our family. The way of mutual honor and respect and love and submission. And last week, Pauline talked about that in the context of marriage. So we come to look at that in the context of family. 5:21, submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. And I want to underline that sentence, because whatever we understand submit to mean or obey to mean, we understand it, we need to understand it in the light of that whole sentence. It doesn't just say submit to one another, or wives submit to your husbands, or children obey your parents. It says out of reverence for Christ, or in Christ, or in the Lord. Pauline called this the third factor. That in a marriage relationship between a husband and wife, between the relationship of a father to his children or parents to their children, is a third factor. And that factor is Jesus. Mick talked to us earlier, didn't he, about bringing Jesus into the center, the centrality of his life. And as we look at these key relationships of a married husband and wife, or of parents and their children, particularly of a father and his children, we remember that third factor, Jesus. Now, to understand a little bit more clearly why Paul is saying the things he is saying, we need to understand a little bit about the Roman world in which Paul and his listeners and hearers lived. In the world of the Roman Empire, the key institution in society was the household. That's very different from our society. In our society and culture, at least up until fairly recent years, the key institution in society was what we called the nuclear family. Mum, dad, and 2.5 children, a dog, and a Ford Focus, or whatever. But the Roman world didn't work like that. It wasn't the nuclear family, but something called the household that was the key institution. And it's that that Paul addresses here. And the household consisted of three sets of relationships. The first was the relationship between husband and wife. The second relationship was that between parents, especially fathers, and we'll come to that in a moment, and children. And the third relationship, which may seem very foreign to us, and there isn't time this morning to unpack it further, my friend Simon Coe may well do that when he looks at the last section of this about masters and slaves, but this third relationship was to do with masters and slaves. And the slaves could be household servants, but they might be managers, they might be tutors to the children, they might be secretaries, but they could still be slaves. So that's why Paul addresses these three key relationships: husband and wife, parents and children, masters and slaves. And what we need to bear in mind is that the husband, father, master can be all the same person. Because this was the household institution, the key to the society. He was called the paterfamilias. That's a Latin word for you to learn. The paterfamilias, the father, the family father. And that role carried weight and responsibility. For the household was a closed and secure unit. If the father of the family became a follower of Jesus, the whole household became followers of Jesus. The whole household was converted. Wife, children, slaves. Even others who might be closely related to that family also became Christians. That's very different from our culture and our society. But that's how it worked. That's why Paul will address all of them as being followers of Jesus. Because if the paterfamilias became a follower of Jesus, the whole household became a follower of Jesus. And close friends and relatives might well join in with that. And so a large household would become a church in the house. So when you read some of the things that Paul writes in the New Testament to the church, you don't imagine a church like this. Imagine a household. The father, the family, the children, the slaves, the friends, relatives, gathered in the home, gathered in the house. The house church, a church in the house, was probably built in that kind of way. And we're trying to reflect something of that and catch the essence of that in our family groups, our smaller group settings. Now, one other thing to help you understand what's going on here. The emperor styled himself as the paterfamilias, the family father of the empire, which he looked upon as his family. So the emperor was a pagan, so everybody in the empire followed the religion of the emperor and were meant to be pagans. So when a household became Christian, it immediately was countercultural. It was flowing in a different direction from that was going on around it. And I don't know how you feel as you listen and watch the news and debates and discussions. I sense more and more that our Christian families and our Christian communities are more and more flowing against the tide. Standing against the tide. I can't go further with that, but in September we're going to be looking at some of the sorts of implications it means to be swimming in the other direction from the tide. So Paul is teaching that the Christian family stroke household, while it maintains the same structure as all other families, should work by very different values. And here's something else we should understand, that the Christian faith gave women and slaves a new status and a new identity and new ways of having value as participating, sharing in the common life of the believing community. Now just imagine the challenges of that for a moment. If you are a master and perhaps his wife who have a number of slaves, some of them are household servants, some may tutor your children, or you may have a farm and they may be agricultural workers, or you may have a small business and they do the work for you. Now, and then when you gather as church, you're all the same. And your slaves might have a word of knowledge for you or speak a prophetic word over your life. Can you imagine some of the tensions that can arise in that? Because suddenly, those who in your thinking are master slaves or just your children now become your brothers and sisters. Now, if you can just begin to understand that a little bit, you'll understand some of the tensions that Paul addresses in those early churches. Paul is talking to Christian believing households and helping them to establish those very different values and ways of thinking and ways of doing things that have helped them to stand against the tide of the pagan empire in which they lived. So that's some background. So let's look now at this second key relationship, that of children and parents. Note, first of all, that Paul addresses the children. Now, there aren't very many in here this morning, although generationally we are or have been children. But he doesn't say, parents, make sure your children obey you. You see, he's already endorsing this change in which the children, now followers of Jesus, because the whole household is following Jesus, the children have their own status as believers. So he calls upon them, he speaks to them as believers. He says, children, obey your parents in the Lord. Obey them as if you're obeying Jesus himself. This obedience, he says, brings its own reward. And he makes his point by referring to the old covenant promise about honoring parents, resulting in a successful and secure future. And I just want to pause here to make a point that statistical evidence shows that strong families make a strong society. And that's all that really that old covenant promise is saying. Strong families, children honoring, obeying parents, and secure families make a strong and secure society. And the statistical evidence for that is overwhelming. So Paul addresses the children themselves. He says, obey. He doesn't tell the parents to make their children obey. He speaks to those children who are followers of Jesus. He says, obey your parents. Honor your parents. But I'm addressing, I think, more likely, mostly parents or past parents or maybe in one or two instances, future parents, I don't know. So Paul turns from that first statement about children obeying their parents to, I think, what I want just to focus on, particularly for a few moments. Verse 4. Fathers, do not exasperate or frustrate or embitter your children. Instead, bring them up in the training and instruction of the Lord. One commentator explains what's happening here. He says, fathers in ancient Rome had extraordinary power over their children. In the world of the Roman Empire, unwanted children, especially girls, were exposed to the elements. That means they were put outside to die in the heat or the frost or the wind or the rain or from wild animals. They were put outside and just left to die or otherwise disposed of. Abortion was also practiced. But Christian parents, Paul says, must not act as though their children were their possessions. Not act as though children were their possessions to be disposed of or to be sent away or to be handed over to somebody else. Paul says, I'm expecting something very different from Christian fathers. They are to bring up, they are to nurture their children. And they're to do this in two ways. First of all, training. We could translate the word discipline, but discipline tends to be misunderstood. The true meaning of discipline is not to do with punishment, although correction may be part of it. But true discipline, discipline means being a disciple, being discipled, being taught, being shown the way, being trained, being developed. And I think whether we translate the word training or discipline, it's to develop character. So he says the first responsibility of a Christian father towards his family is to train them to develop their character. They might have, they go to school for a formal education. Their mother has a hugely important role too in nurturing and bringing them up. But Paul lays this on the shoulders of Christian fathers to make disciples of their children. The second thing he says is instruction, shaping their minds and understanding, bringing them instruction. Now, I want to tread carefully here because we live in a very different culture. I'm well aware of that. We're trying to touch on significant principles that lie beneath this. But I do have to say, and I point back my fingers as much at myself as any, that it's so easy to step back from these two areas of responsibility. Either to leave it with your wife, with the children's mother, or to leave it to school, or to leave it to youth leaders. But Paul places fair and square on the shoulders of Christian fathers the responsibility of developing their children's character and shaping their minds and understanding, forming, if you like, their worldview, if you understand what I mean by that. You can see why looking at this again made me somewhat reflective. Look back on my own record, if you like, and asking myself quite significant and serious questions of myself about my relationship with my grandchildren. Am I being proactive enough? I can stand back because I don't understand them very well. I don't understand their generation very well. Their values, and I have to struggle. I have to work hard, try and grapple. I had some good conversations with my two grandsons from Canada. And it wasn't just to do with the difference between English and Canadian culture. It was to do with where they are at on their journey of faith. Are they on a journey of faith? And what does that mean? And we touched on some quite significant issues. And it was clear that their thinking was very different. I'm asking myself questions out of this. As a father, as a grandfather, am I still carrying rightly? Because from time to time, even my grown-up sons still ask my advice. But you see, the third thing is, that was of the Lord. It's okay, stay put. Of the Lord. The training, the instruction was to be with Jesus at the center. Jesus at the center. Introducing them to Jesus as the center of their lives. The third factor. In a word, then, fathers are to disciple their children. Wider aspects of life preparation and formal education would be provided by the mother, in many cases perhaps by a tutor, a slave, in our culture, of course, by school. And especially then, the father was not to exasperate, frustrate, or embitter his children. And if we looked at the parallel sentence in his letter to the Colossians, he says, so that they become discouraged. I suppose this really hit me. Looking back across the years, I've tried to be aware of these kinds of teachings. How well have I done, I ask myself, in not discouraging my children? There was one thing that they did really get exasperated with me. And it's one of the risks of being a preacher. And the fact that as a preacher, everybody wants illustrations. And guess where the best place for illustrations comes from? your kids. And they, I've seen them more or less crawl underneath the pews, as we did at the time, got later chairs. And I realized it really was embarrassing for them if I used them as illustrations. I wouldn't dare use my wife, of course, as an illustration, except of something very wonderful and positive and amazing. But more seriously, there are times when simply by not listening to them, not paying proper attention to them, by being not being impartial, by assuming that it was my daughter's fault just because she was a girl and the other two were boys. She was a past master, mind you, my daughter, my elder daughter, who was between the two boys. No, I'm using her as an illustration, aren't I, you see? But she won't get exasperated, A, because she knows me too well, and B, because she'll never listen to this. But she was a genius at creating havoc and then making it look like it was the boy's fault. And so, you know, there could be times, I'm sure, when I frustrated my kids, not just by not listening, by making assumptions about whose fault was what, by maybe favoring one over the other without really thinking carefully about it and waiting for Doreen to remind me afterwards. You didn't handle that very well, which you did sometimes, quite rightly. You know, you can provide your own things, guys, about this. Don't exasperate, don't frustrate, don't embitter so that your children become discouraged. I was a school teacher for 11 years, secondary school teacher. We were youth leaders for many, many years. We have seen the effects of discouraged children. Because the relationships at home, particularly with their father, have broken down or not been good or not been healthy. These are real issues, and they are real issues in our society today, real issues in our culture today. We need Christian dads standing up to the, what's the American expression, Mike? Standing up to the plate? Is that it? From baseball? Yeah. Almost? Something. Okay. Christian dads standing up and taking their place, beginning to disciple their children. It's a partnership, yes, of course it's a partnership. But I wanted to make certain emphases clear this morning, because Paul does. That's the father's task, to disciple his children. And why is all this so important? Why all this is so important? Because in fulfilling his role, a Christian father is reflecting the father heart of God. A little bit earlier in his letter to the Ephesians, Paul says, I kneel before the Father, from whom every family in heaven and on earth derives its name, that is, its nature. So we're reflecting, guys, dads, we're reflecting, dads to be. We're reflecting the Father's heart. Sadly, fatherhood is the missing element in our society today, especially in the failure of men to take responsibility for the children they've been instrumental in producing. From God's perspective, families incomplete without fathers. Christian fathers need to be examples of leadership to their families, fair, patient, listening, impartial. We live in a society today in which marriage and family are under unprecedented pressure and challenge. What marriage means, what family means, are being, I suppose the word for those of you who understand what I'm saying, being deconstructed, being taken apart, being redefined. So in our society with that sort of challenge, Christian families are hugely important in demonstrating a different culture with Jesus at the center. I vividly remember one young girl of, 16, 17, when we were leading the youth group in Basingstoke many, many years ago, who His father had walked out on the family. She was obviously, you know, discouraged was a light word for it. And I remember praying with her to forgive her father. And one of the things she said to us, which stuck with me, stuck with both of us, she says, when I get married and have a family, I'm going to model my home and my family on yours. And she did. She remained a lovely friend until she died of lung cancer a couple of years ago. You see, Christian families can not only be a reflection of the Father heart of God, not only living out the light in a way that's an example and an influence in society, but our Christian families can be a source of compassion, help, and support to those whose own lives have been affected by the failure of fathers and family. My time is going. I'd love to tell you about one or two other people, a couple of girls whose father, in essence, was a bigamist and had two families. And when they discovered that, discouraged would again just be a very light word. Or Matthew, who came to us when we lived in Leicestershire from the care system, and was the first guy from that care system in Leicestershire ever to go to university. He came and lived with us for what was going to be a few weeks and turned into a few years, I think. You know, and we didn't do anything. We just, who we were, to influence, to bring strength, to bring courage. And I want to encourage you, let your family, your home, be like that too. I'm going to pray. Our Father, who lives in the heavens, help us by the power of your Spirit to live as your family on the earth. Guide us as parents, especially as fathers, in the raising of our children and the conduct of our family life, so that we can be examples of a better way to what we see around us. Help us too to be loving and supportive to those who have been failed by their fathers and their families. May your kingdom come in the lives and homes of our community and society. In Jesus' name, amen.
Thank you, Tony. I wonder if the worship band would come back.